Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
You've heard about North Korea all day long today, Montreal. And you know what? It couldn't have happened at a more appropriate day. I think many of you have been listening, know my feelings about all these little holidays and these life cycle events and the hypocrisy of it. I think sometimes Thanksgiving Day should be changed to Guilt Rendering Day. Thankful we should be as Canadians, as North Americans, every day. But the fact is that we live at a time of ungracious self-absorption and inelegant consumerism, and we try to shield ourselves from what's really going on in the world. Well, the world keeps dumping garbage all over the place, and it's coming to our doorstep ever closer every day. To those of you who get our bulletin from the Institute, you'll see that I wanted to really shake things up today. I don't want anybody to be comfortable with tonight's show. This is a world on the brink. It's not just about North Korea and their ambitions. It's about Iran's agenda. It's about the duplicity of Pakistan. It's about the terrorist axis. It's about NATO's failure of will. We're coming to a time of reckoning. This is a time when we have to take stock of ourselves, our country, our national character. North Korea is a regional problem, will be dealt with as a regional problem. But the ties that link North Korea to Iran, to the terror axis, are clear. Iranian observers were at the first tests of the rockets in Korea several weeks ago. NATO has been severely criticized by Canadian commanders who led Operation Medusa, the Canadian-led operation, into Pakistan. The duplicity of Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, in playing both ends against the middle is remarkable to watch. And how long are we going to continue to watch this? So on this Thanksgiving, we're faced with a great number of problems, and they're all strung together. They're all related. There's no escaping one reality. You can try and separate out and micromanage each of these problems and reduce them to some kind of inconsequential level, but it won't happen. The world won't let you. Now, we're going to examine these five areas: the problems with Iran, the problems with Pakistan, the terrorist access, NATO's failure of will, and the nuclear North Korea tonight, from London to Toronto to New York and Washington. Our guest tonight will be Colonel Peter Reynolds, former NATO Director of Public Affairs and Senior Advisor to the United Nations Office of Project Services during the Iraqi elections. I'll be talking to him about the criticisms of NATO, particularly leveled by Canadian officials and military men over the past 8 days. We're going to be touching a little bit as well on whether Pakistan is a true ally and can be counted on for anything. Colonel Reynolds has known theaters of war, he's known theaters of diplomacy, he's known theaters of loyalty, and he's known theaters of duplicity. We're going to be talking to John Thompson of the McKenzie Institute. He's their senior foreign and defense analyst, and he makes the case, and has consistently made the case, that you can't separate out the problems and the relationships of the various terror groups, nor nations for whom they act as clients and proxies. And finally, we'll be talking to Ann Bajewski, who's a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and the founder of EyeOnTheUN.org, about whether there's any efficacy, whether really these sanctions, whether UN or American, can have any use at all. And we're going to get the ball rolling with Colonel Peter Reynolds right after this. And you can email us with your comments after the show at info@iepm.ca. And as I said in the introduction, we're talking about a world on the brink tonight. We're not just going to be talking about North Korea. We're going to be talking about Iran, the duplicity of Pakistan, the terror axis, and NATO's failure of will. And we're starting with that, and we're privileged and honored and pleased to be joined by Colonel Peter Reynolds from London. Peter, thanks for staying up so late.
No problem, Barrett. Good to talk to you.
The press here in Canada, it's been mentioned a bit in the States, but in Canada for 5 days has been filled with editorials about NATO, editorials that seem to say that Canada... This isn't the States. This is Canada's now disappointed in NATO's inability to get off the mark, and particularly where it concerns Pakistan. We had the opposition parties in the House of Commons say, well, you know, if we're going to be over there, we better go across the border and hunt the Taliban. So we did an Operation Medusa. And now we find that Pakistan is not only not a worthy ally, but when we turn to NATO, there doesn't seem to be enough support, at least not for the Canadian generals. or the level that the Canadian generals have requested. Given the failure of will we're seeing at NATO, first of all, I should let you address that. Is there a failure of will at NATO? And if there is, how is that going to have repercussions as far as the North Korean crisis goes?
I mean, one of the fundamental problems that NATO forces in a theater of war have always had is that they not only report down the normal chain of command, i.e. to the man who's wearing the most stars in the theater, but they also have a secondary axis, and they can talk to their own governments. And that means that if they don't like something, they'll not only whinge to the chain of command, but they'll also talk to their own politicians and own political leaderships. And that makes it quite difficult sometimes to run operations.
Okay, so what is a nation like Canada supposed to do that is leading, that led Operation Medusa, operated in the Punjabi district of southern Afghanistan, crossed the border to chase the Taliban into Pakistan, and then NATO's own report on that operation, which went from September 4th to September 17th, states that the Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence, the ISI, which is, has been called a parallel government, was involved in supplying military capability to the Taliban.
I don't think that's in any way incorrect.
NATO's
I've been trying to read up all day. And what's Canada supposed to do? Well, Canada has to make it quite clear. And I believe it is being reinforced even today, even as we sit here and talk, that General Richards is talking to General Musharraf today.
We better identify for our audience who General Richards is.
General David Richards is a British officer who has recently taken over command of all NATO forces in Afghanistan. A three-star man has flown to Pakistan allegedly today to meet with President Pervez Musharraf to discuss exactly these matters.
Can Musharraf be believed? He seems to be playing both these games in the middle and taking America for a ride. What chance does NATO have against this character?
Well, I think NATO will take with them sufficient evidence that he can't actually deny that there has been a certain amount of help and assistance. You have to look at the historical facts here. The ISI were totally sidelined for some years, but when it came to defeating the Soviets in Afghanistan, they actually channeled enough funds from the CIA and the Saudis, and they provided, through the ISI, enough arms, the CIA, to man and equip a 240,000-man army. And the Saudis, in fact, matched U.S. funding dollar for dollar. And it all was done mostly through Pakistan. Now, that reestablished them in a fairly strong position in Pakistan. At the same time, they also helped to set up the madrasas and turning out thousands of Talibans who joined the Mujahideen in the anti-Soviet campaign. And in part, that's my Musharraf when he said recently on his sort of tour of U.S. and Europe, hell, Pakistan was responsible for the fall of the Soviet Union, because soon after the Soviet Union left Afghanistan, you know, they took a fairly serious hit.
But well, that's all well and good. But as the NATO report points out, today the ISI, it doesn't matter that, you know, 20 years ago they helped defeat the Soviet Union. Today the NATO report points out that the ISI is split between radical Muslim hardliners and more moderate factions.
Now, that's Musharraf's problem.
Well, it's the West problem. If Pakistan is giving aid and comfort to the Taliban, how can we possibly count on them as an ally in the war against terror? And does it not then say that the next step is to put a lot more boots on the ground from NATO or from whatever coalition is willing and really finish the problem once and for all, even if that means taking over part of Pakistani sovereignty?
And you just mentioned the appropriate words, is the coalition willing?
Right.
Or the coalition of the willing? And judging by most recent efforts, the coalition is having a tough time finding the bodies to put on the ground.
Well, if are we seeing in the West what I said in my intro, that every single problem that comes up, whether it's Iran, whether it's Pakistan, North Korea today, it seems that not only the Western intelligentsia, the Western media, the Western intellectuals, every time some retrograde tin pot dictator says something, we find all kinds of excuses. Well, he didn't really mean it. Today, there's already people saying, well, it really wasn't the nuclear test. It was some kind of explosion. But every time a Western leader says anything, he's immediately disbelieved. So where do we go with this kind of a mindset? It's Thanksgiving today in Canada. If I was sitting celebrating Thanksgiving, I'm not sure what I'd be thankful of. I'd be bloody nervous. But think of your response, because we've got to pay a bill. They're making signals to me. And we're in a new studio, so we can't talk to each other. This is hand signal time. Montreal, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
And tonight on this Thanksgiving, we're out to make you uncomfortable. We're talking about a world on the brink. Iran's tyrannical agenda, the terrorist axis, a nuclear North Korea. And we're continuing a discussion with Colonel Peter Reynolds, former NATO Director of Public Affairs and Senior Advisor to the United Nations Office of Project Services in Iraq during their elections, on NATO's failure of will, and can Pakistan really be counted on as an ally? And Peter, I asked you before the break, if the situation is such that we have this massive fear, this massive amount of excuses being made for tyrants like Musharraf, and there's no will on the part of the West to put more boots on the ground on the Pakistani side of the Afghanistan conflict, where are we headed?
Well, it's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be pretty either.
And it's not going to be pretty, because it's going to be darn difficult to either sanitize the border and just make sure nothing comes in or out. We didn't manage to do it 100 years ago through the mountain pass and things like that. I mean, the only thing we can hope for now at the moment is that things are going to quieten down as we head into winter and everybody goes to sleep for a couple of months.
But it's becoming more and more obvious that as important as the Canadian mission is in Afghanistan, and I'm a strong supporter of it, as you know, you need allies to do it, to help nation building. If you've got a guy like Musharraf who's playing both ends against the middle, is there any possibility that the West will ratchet this up a little more and at least take the territory it needs to clean up the Taliban from behind, because they're not really infiltrating deep into Pakistan, not as massive groups or not as massive combat units.
And those hopes and aspirations are being pursued by President Karzai as well, because he's hoping to have a meeting with all the tribal leaders in that particular region on both sides of the border. To try and prevent the sort of egress and comings and goings there.
What is the role of Britain now, if we can call this the lame duck Blair year? What can we expect from Gordon Brown, who'll be, taking over the Labour Party from Tony Blair?
That's not a done deal yet.
It's not a done deal, but
There are certain hopefuls, I suspect, standing in the wings who may just throw their hat into see whether they can make it.
But can we expect a continuation of a solid, the same way as John Ibbotson, a Canadian columnist, put it, a solid Anglo-American front on this issue, or an English-speaking world front on this issue, for whoever takes over from Tony Blair?
If it's Gordon Brown, you need to understand that Gordon Brown only supported the Iraq invasion at the 11th hour. He remained unconvinced by all the evidence that was shoveled in front of them during various cabinet meetings and things like that. So there may be, I suspect there will be support, but it will not be as wholehearted and as unquestioning as his predecessor.
Well, Peter Reynolds, I thank you for your time. Go get a good night's sleep. And you've added to the picture, at least as far as NATO and Afghanistan and Pakistan, of how truly on the edge we all are. Thanks very much, Peter Reynolds.
I'll just leave you with one quick thought.
Yes, yes.
Don't forget, it was probably the Pakistanis who furnished the North Koreans with the nuclear technology.
We were going to get to that and mention also the fact that they were Iranian observers at the first test of the missiles.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful world, isn't it? Aren't we all thankful for everything?
Have a great day.
Peter Reynolds, have a good night. Montreal, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
And as I said at the top of the hour, we're going to make you uncomfortable this Thanksgiving. I don't want you to be comfortable. Instead of giving thanks, I want you to think about your ungracious self-absorption, your inelegant consumerism that we're all involved in, and understand that we are living now in a world on the brink. We just finished talking to Colonel Peter Reynolds from London, formerly Director of NATO Public Affairs, about the duplicity of Pakistan, NATO's failure of will. Are they going to support Canadian demands for more troops? We've got issues on the table that keep getting thrown at us, and no amount of excuse-making is going to make them disappear. It seems that we in Canada, every time an Iran, a Pakistan, a North Korea come up, we've got people, we've got apologists saying, well, they don't really mean that, and they didn't really say it, and today we've got people saying, well, there's really not even a bomb. But every time a leader in the free world says anything, they're automatically hit over the head by the chattering classes of the Salon liberals as being some kind of cultural imperialist. Well, it doesn't wash anymore. That kind of argument doesn't work anymore. We as Canadians today have to reflect on being involved in the spread of freedom in the world, because the world keeps throwing its garbage at our feet, and it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. And I see I've ticked off enough people, or interested enough people, I'm not sure. Our lines are quite lit up, but before we go to the lines, I want to get to our next guest. John Thompson is president of the Mackenzie Institute, and the aim of the Institute is to provide research and commentary on issues of political instability, terrorism, political extremism, and staying to the proposition and defending the proposition that our liberal democratic traditions must be safeguarded and fostered and shouldn't be compromised to any standards of moral relativism. John Thompson, welcome.
Thank you.
John, I'm particularly impressed by a number of your writings, but and there's a theme that runs through it that I want to explore tonight because of the five matters that we've been discussing since the program started, Iran and Pakistan, the NATO failure of will, the nuclear North Korea issue, the question of the terror axis, and you've written often and eloquently that at our own peril do we diminish the interrelationships between the various terror groups, the Al-Qaedas, the Hezbollahs, and the states that use them as proxies, and that all these states and all these groups really do form much more of an organized front than we in the West want to believe. And indeed, I think some of that is underlined by the fact that just a few weeks ago when North Korea was testing missiles, Iranian observers were there, and we just heard Colonel Reynolds tell us how Pakistan had supplied a lot of the technology and for North Korea. How deep are the relationships between the frontline terror groups and the states behind them, even though those states would be Shia and Sunni?
Well, it's all part of what's basically emerged and was built up to the 20th century as a global jihad. Now, when I'm saying this, I'll be talking about the global jihad as a single entity, but don't for a minute believe there's a single structure or a single organization or a single willpower behind it. It's basically a giant Uber network, you know, a network of networks of networks all connected together. And what unites them is it's sort of it's a common purpose and more or less common ideology. And they work in parallel with each other when it's necessary, and they work alone when it's necessary, but the end effect would be the same.
If it's not one corporation, let me put it in that terms, is there at least a board of directors that meets? And I want to ask you about one specific situation. Iran has never really denied its sponsorship of Hezbollah, but when it came to Hamas, we heard all kinds of denials from Iran, until pictures were circulated that in the midst of the Mideast War, the latest Mideast War, there was Ahmed Ejad shaking hands with Khaled Mashal, the political leader of Hamas, who sits in Damascus. Now, are there irregular meetings going on between representatives of the nations like Iran, like Syria, and all these various groups, regardless of their internal differences?
Yes, there have been for years. Major ones, I think, in Sudan in 1996, that sort of brought everyone together. And there was some attention paid to that because, we were all focused on Saddam Hussein at the time.
Right.
And the Iraqis, had turned up at this meeting. And there was Osama bin Laden and the Iranians and all the rest. And they were all busy chatting again about the jihad. There was also a rather critical meeting in February 2003 in Tehran. One Western reporter was paying attention to it, and that's the last time Osama bin Laden made a public appearance. He stuck his head into this conference for about half an hour.
John Thompson, Mackenzie Institute President, we'll be right back with you. We're just going to pay some bills.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
And on this Thanksgiving, we're talking about a world on the brink. As much of our media, as much as so much of our academic leadership
as much as so many of our political leaders and on the left want to micromanage every single threat to our freedoms down to inconsequential levels, the hits keep on coming. Iran, Pakistan, NATO's failure of will, a nuclear North Korea. And with us now is John Thompson, president of the McKenzie Institute. And we've been talking about the terror axis and how close they relate. And John, you were explaining before the break that it's not so much that they're talking to each other every day, but there are alliances within the broad alliance, and they get together every now and then, and they certainly know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's conferencing between these dozens of organizations and dozens of intellectual threads. I mean, if you look at, you know, where this global jihad is coming from inside Islam, it's, you know, there's sort of two main streams, Khomeini Shiism and then the Wahhabi Sunniism. But there's other tendencies in Islam that contribute to it. There's the national breakdowns, there's the regional breakdowns, and the organizational breakdowns, but there is a common idea of what victory is, and a common sort of methodology that's being exercised.
What is it in this country that makes so many people, in, as I said, in the media, in the political world, in academia, refuse to accept at face value what these guys said, whether they be, as you said, Khomeini Shias or Wahhabi Sunnis, when they say they want to create Islamic hegemony? Why don't we just believe them? What is wrong? Why do we have to sort of dumb everything down and move it away to the side?
Well, I guess two things. I've always sort of dialed back to Hitler sometimes, but you know, if you read 1931, Mein Kampf, you would have dismissed it as sort of a lunatic raving, but it turned out to be a pretty reliable guide to what Hitler was thinking. And then also there's just that sheer human inability to accept bad news. I mean, if you have to say, there's a hurricane coming to the coast, and you've got to arrange evacuations. Very few people actually leave as soon as evacuations come. Then in the last hour, the roads are comes up solid. It's just human nature.
But, you know, it's an interesting analogy you draw with Hitler in 1921 or 22. I mean, the only thing Hitler managed to pull off in the 20s, besides roughing up a lot of people here and there, was the Beer Hall Putsch that failed. These guys today, they've pulled off 9/11, they've pulled off Madrid, Bali, Beslan, London. They pulled off an aggressive attack against Israel. They're not fooling around. These are not a bunch of guys sitting around a beer hall listening to somebody's wacko ravings. These are many more people today at the same stage where Hitler was in the 20s, listening to wacko ravings and acting on them and ready to die for them.
Well, it's also getting worse. Remember, we had to fight all of Germany. Bear in mind that, you know, the Nazi Party was, what, less than 1% of the population?
Yep, yep.
We were concerned about the entire Soviet Union, bearing in mind that the Communist Party was a tiny fraction of the overall population. There has been a battle for who controls Islam inside Islam, but one side hasn't been fighting. And there may come the point where we can't afford to distinguish between good Muslims and aggressive Muslims anymore because it's too late. And part of this thing, again, if Islam is, it had been evolving some liberal traditions and other things in the 19th century and the 18th century, and they're almost gone now. The other aspect is not just the terrorists, it's also this sort of global Dawah movement, which is sort of the political front. It's Sinn Féin to the Jihad's IRA, which is there to, you know, work again, especially among the immigrant communities inside the Western world. And we brought these people in. You know, the first generation came in like normal immigrants. You know, they're going to work every hour of the day hard to establish for their families and a new life for themselves. But now the culture has followed them from the Middle East. It's the militant culture, and it's there to prevent them from integrating. They want to see these communities not as immigrants into the Western world blending in with everybody else, but as colonies.
Are you taking a bit of positive feeling out of the fact that we've got a government that seems to understand where we should be on the international front, and also is sending out signals that, you know, this multiculturalism business has gone a little too far, and we've got to start sticking on Canadian values and Western pluralist values?
Well, it's a start. You're seeing the same thing in Australia. You're seeing the same thing.
Australia's gone much further than we have.
Well, and we all have a lot further to go.
Right.
Actually, I think one of the things, for example, when you look at the Dawa movement, is we really should be practicing religious reciprocity. You know, if you cannot have, let's say, open practice of other faiths inside many Muslim countries like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia, then we shouldn't, I mean, what's good for them should be good for us.
We should not raise, right, we should not raise, religious sacrament to the level of secular rite.
Well, the other thing is we've got to turn the dawah off. I mean, if the Muslims who immigrated here, if their children are going to fit into the society, they've got to evolve naturally, not have these Wahhabi clerics working them over in the mosques and getting them all excited, and again, recruiting the young ones among them for the jihad. We've got to bring a halt to that.
John Thompson.
Sorry.
We're fighting clocks here, but John, I thank you. And just as Peter Reynolds painted a portrait for us, on the province in Afghanistan and Pakistan, of NATO's failure of will, of being, of how much on the edge we are, you've brought it home to us to show us what Canada needs to do and how much on the edge, or how close to the edge we are, and we can't afford to go much closer. John Thompson, president of the McKenzie Institute, and I would recommend to all listeners, please go to mckenzieinstitute.com, and it's a fascinating website, and it's a worthwhile institute to support. John Thompson, thank you very much. We'll be right back with Ann Bajewski from New York.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
And we've been dealing with the world on the brink this Thanksgiving. We've gone around the world, Iran, Pakistan, the terror axis, NATO's failure of will. And right now, it's my pleasure to welcome Ann Bajewski, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and founder of EyeOnTheUN.org. Go to this site, I-I-E-Y-E, EyeOnTheUN.org. Ann is a Torontonian who's doing great work in the United States, and one of the a voice of clarity, candor, and courage that's rarely come out of Canada. And we want you to do something. I think she should represent this country somewhere, because we need some straight talks and plain speaking, as Harry Truman said.
Well, we definitely have a problem in terms of a lack of moral clarity in international relations, and the UN is probably the center of moral obfuscation.
And I know your time is pressed, so let's get right to the point. North Korea, big discussions, of course, all day. And, of course, in Canada, they started to ratchet up the machine that, well, maybe it wasn't a bomb. Maybe it was something else. Maybe they're just saber-rattling. Number one, does it matter if they want the world to think it's a bomb and they want a saber-rattle? We need to respond. And number two, are any sanctions that come out of the world community, as opposed to any bilateral or multilateral sanctions, going to work if not supported by political will?
Well, we definitely have a problem. I mean, the UN has been talking the talk for years and years, and North Korea thumbed its noses at the institution and the International Atomic Energy Agency and its treaty obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And now we see the consequences of that. And, you know, if we're going to wait for the UN to get serious about nuclear proliferation, our worst enemies will have the bombs and terrible mass weapons of mass destruction before we know it. We see it with North Korea. We see it with Iran, which is continuing to be hell-bent on the acquisition of nuclear arms. And the UN is essentially impotent.
And in fact, we had Iranian observers at the first tests of some of the North Korean missiles just weeks ago.
Well, no doubt that the Iranians are looking very carefully at what the UN Security Council will do. So far, it's had limited resolutions, and the last couple of days, some presidential statements. The United States is pressing for a strong resolution with serious sanctions. I doubt that the Chinese, it doesn't seem as if the Chinese and the Russians are interested in being so strong-minded about it. And the Iranians will take hope if the Security Council doesn't act swiftly and powerfully.
Do we believe Chinese? We were hearing these reports that Secretary Rice has been talking to the Chinese half the night, as Chris Hill, Undersecretary of State, said. Do we believe the Chinese protestations of how upset they are, or is this just another case like Musharraf of playing both ends against the middle?
Well, we're going to know that very soon. I mean,
what's the litmus test?
Whether or not that the Chinese are prepared to go along with John Bolton's strong resolution or not. But there's no doubt that the Chinese have said they're not interested in sanctions against Iran. You know, in their North Korean case, in part it's too late, in part we will watch North Korea. Not only the war, of course, the worry is that they cannot be contained, but that they will pass along to forces which are certainly uncontrollable terrorist elements. And the Iranians, the Chinese are not interested in sanctions on Iran, and so we are heading towards a nuclear Iran unless something is done very shortly, and it won't be done through the United Nations.
And we may be heading toward a nuclear axis, as Colonel Peter Reynolds told us earlier. It was Pakistan that gave North Korea a great deal of technology they needed. Anne Bajewski, thank you very much for joining us from New York. I promised to get you out quickly. I know you're at an event, and I thank you very much again.
You're welcome.
Montreal, Canada, everybody listening on the World Wide Web, we are a world on the brink tonight. And I want to leave you with just these words from a great Irishman named John Philpot Curran, who said in the 1800s, "The condition upon which man hath received liberty is eternal vigilance, which condition if he break, servitude is at once the consequence of his crime and the punishment of his guilt. We need to do more." Chris Smith, thank you, and Master Control. We'll be back with you tomorrow night.